All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. I'm Bobby Fenton. First show of the month of April, and that is draft month, as you know, as the draft is at the end of April. But man, we got a lot of stuff even besides that going on today's show, as the Bucks have signed yet another free agent back. We've got NFL news with the owners' meetings coming up, rules changes, things like that. All kinds of fun on the show today. So thank you for joining us. It is a pleasure, as always, to be on JoeBucksFan.com, the single best place anywhere for Bucks coverage, internet, TV, radio, or otherwise. And thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. Right now, they've got a few things going. First of all, if you want to check it out, it's tax season, right? That's all going on, and hopefully you guys are filing, right, as our tax system, even though they know damn well what we owe, makes us actually do it, even though they already have those same numbers. So go do all those things. But here's what happens at Bill Curry Ford. If you go over there, purchase any new vehicle, they will double your tax refund up to $5,000. And they've got plenty to choose from. If you go to the website, BillCurryFord.com, that's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. And you can look at all the inventory, brand new, pre-owned, used, anything like that. Plus, if you don't want to go, they'll bring it to you to test drive. Like, they'll deliver it to your home or your office, wherever you want it, really. And same thing if you end up making a purchase. They'll deliver it to you. Or you can go to the massive showroom and massive lot they have a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry, just north of Hillsboro. They're always there. Also, hey, if you buy a new F-150, a new Ranger, or a Super Duty retail purchase of any kind on the truck, they will give you a spray-in bed liner with a lifetime warranty on the truck. And, of course, you get the nationwide lifetime warranty. And that means if you own the car, vehicle, truck, whatever it is that you bought there years from now, as long as you're still the owner, engine trouble, whatever, you bring it back in. All those things come with any purchase at Bill Curry Ford. So again, the website, BillCurryFord.com, or check them out a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. So thanks to them. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. Of course, the big news, naturally, it broke last week, just minutes after we put the show up on Joe Bucks Fan. So I didn't get it in on last week's show, but Leonard Fournette re-signs with the Bucks. This was the most surprising of the free agents, because this was the one of that list of eight names, and I think I was actually even referring to it as the list of seven because I had just assumed Fournette wouldn't be re-signed, but on that list, this was the one we thought, yeah, he's probably not going to be back. He's priced himself out of Tampa Bay with his postseason performance, but you know, the same factors that the Bucks had to contend with in free agency as far as a limited salary cap and things like that are the same factors that apply to everybody else. You know, COVID has had an impact, so the market never really materialized as much for Fournette as I think he wanted, and I don't think he's unhappy to be back, but just going by some of the quotes he had after he re-signed and when he went and did his Zoom press conference with the local media, here were a couple of the quotes. One, he said, the market was kind of low this year. Another quote was, it was a difficult process, I know what I deserve. And these were sprinkled in amongst quotes by him of being happy to be here, but they're just some veiled things that I think he kind of let on that I think he was hoping for more. And so this was not a great year to be hoping for more for most guys, and so it never materialized around the league, and the Bucks, to their credit, didn't give up on trying to bring him back. They just said, you know, hey, we'd love to have you back, but obviously if somebody had come over the top with a bigger offer, he probably would have taken it. And it didn't happen, so he is going to be back with the Bucks, and that's great. I was never against bringing Fournette back. I was against breaking the bank to bring a running back when you could get them the same way they got Fournette, which is just, you know, either off the street or a very low-cost trade or something like that. I mean, these guys they're not hard to acquire. But the Bucks have him back, and that's great. And so that leaves only Antonio Brown now on the Buccaneers' offense, not returning. But even already, and this is amazing, I read this earlier on Greg Allman's Twitter feed, and I didn't realize it and didn't believe it. The Buccaneers are the first Super Bowl team in the modern era, okay? Any of these Super Bowl teams, first one to return 22 starters the next year. And I was like, wait, really? Like, the Bucs are the first team to do anything, like, good. You know, they may be the first team to do something that's not something you want, but they're the first team to do that. In this day and age, and again, COVID is a part of that, and not that it's a good thing, but it just tampered down the market for everything. Like, it wasn't like a normal year where you win a championship and other teams come in and raid your roster and throw all these ridiculous numbers at guys. And the Bucks still had to get creative because of the salary cap situation. But they are going to return all 22 starters. I mean, they've lost Joe Haig, Andrew Adams, reserve special teams guy, reserve safety. And there was one other one, I forget his name. That's it. They brought everybody else back so far. And Antonio Brown, by the way, they're trying on that. The reason Antonio Brown hasn't been re-signed, according to reports, is because he's waffling, and probably the same way Fournette was. He's thinking maybe he could get something that all of a sudden isn't materializing, so he may yet still sign with the Bucks. But the reports are that the Bucks have made more than one offer to Antonio Brown, and Brown is the one saying, okay, thanks, I see your offer, let me just get back to you on that. And like I said, I think he's hoping, or was hoping, there'd be more money somewhere else, and that he revitalized and revived his career with that season he had last year. He did a fine job. I'm just saying, those contracts aren't coming this year. So maybe there could be news about Antonio Brown soon where he finally says, okay, I'll stay with Tampa Bay and sign whatever it is the Bucks offered him. Or maybe somebody else does come through, but it's just not that kind of year, like in free agency. And everybody knows, you know, the salary cap's down, number one. Number two, everybody knows it's going to be bigger in future years, which is why the Bucks were able to do what they did with all this deferred money and these void years and everything with all these contracts they moved around. And every other team's probably just kind of waiting and seeing. So, you know, Chris Godwin will have that opportunity after this season. He plays 1 year on the franchise tag, and maybe hopefully things open up next year. And I say hopefully, not because I want to lose Chris Godwin. I just mean in general, that means the world is getting back to normal, not just the NFL. You know, Antonio Brown maybe plays another year here and hopes he can continue to impress. And the other thing is the Bucks, you know, may have a prospect on the fire here with Larry Fitzgerald. And I'm not saying that that's going to happen. His name's been connected with the Bucks. Of course, we know Arians knows him from Arizona. So does Leftwich. And Larry Fitzgerald's still a very good receiver. He's one of the all-time greats. Of course, he's been in the league quite a while. Now he's getting older. But, I mean, either way, I'm not going to freak out. I'm not going to freak out if we don't re-sign Antonio Brown and don't get Fitzgerald. It's not like we're in that position right now. I think the Bucks are pretty well shored up where they are. Just like Fournette, no problem having him back. And Antonio Brown did some good things, including catching a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl. But the Bucks and most NFL teams, you know, nobody's going nuts. Nobody's breaking the bank. And so it's not a great year as a player to be in this position, and it just the way it fell. So we'll see what happens. But either way, the Buccaneers have returned once more 22 starters from a Super Bowl team, which has never been done before by a Super Bowl team in the modern era, which is incredible. So people say, hey, this team has a chance to be even better. Now, we go about this on our show all the time. We talk about it. And this stuff's way more random than we give it credit for. Bucks are certainly going to be a good team. And yes, roster-wise, they certainly look like they're right where they need to be. This is the same team that won a Super Bowl. They're all back. Doesn't mean you win it again. And they could be better. They were 11-5. They could be 12-4 or 13-3. And lose in the wild card round or something like that. Or not the wild card round, lose in the divisional round. Or they could be 11-5 again, and this time they lose their first playoff game. There's no guarantees about anything. But the Buccaneers deviated from their usual pay-as-you-go method this year for a specific reason, and that's because they think they're in their prime window right now to maximize what they have and give themselves the best chance. And that's all you can do, is give yourself a chance. You cannot guarantee anything. You cannot sign, seal, and deliver a Super Bowl by making these moves and just say, hey, there you go, we're going to win it again. You do these things and you hope it lines up and you give yourself the best chance. But there's still a degree of randomness to all this that can't be helped. It's thrilling to see, though, and I'm already excited. I mean, I was excited for 2021 the minute the final gun blew in Super Bowl 55, but I'm really excited now. And as we approach the draft, the Bucks are just full go, best player available mode. And Bruce Arians even said he's excited about it because he hasn't really done a lot of drafts like that. And he said, he compared it to a beauty pageant. Like, we can just sit back and, you know, argue in the war room about what we like about guys, what we don't like. Is this backer better than this receiver? Or is this lineman better than this safety? Or what? And just get the guy they think is the best player. And that's great. I mean, it's going to be fun. when you know you're not honed in on a certain guy or two. Although honestly, I do kind of like I thought last year's draft was really fun when you kind of know what you need and you're able to hone in on like a certain group of guys at a certain position, and then you get to play the game and make it happen. I thought that was a fun pre-draft last year. I mean, every draft is fun just watching the draft, even without having a favorite team. But as a fan, I kind of enjoyed, okay, we want to get one of these linemen. Here's where we pick. Here's other teams that need a lineman. And then trading up just one pick just to get it. Like, I enjoyed all that. That was fun. So I'm not sure if it's more entertaining this way because you're kind of just like, okay, whatever. Just let me know when it's our turn and I'll just see who's on the board, you know. I kind of liked watching the Giants take Andrew Thomas, and then, you know, somebody else takes one of the other linemen, and then worse keeps falling, and you're thinking, okay, you know, that was fun. Like, that felt like more of a chess match and that type of thing, which the Bucs eventually succeeded in when they were able to draft Tristan Wirfs, who early returns say might be the best of those first-round linemen, even though he was the one picked the latest. But either way, you know, we're only a few weeks away. In fact, what's today, April 1st? I'm recording this on Thursday morning, April 1st. So what is the draft? I guess 4 weeks from today. So that's exciting. And we're in that window now where we're not counting back from the Super Bowl. We're counting forward toward the draft. And there's been some pro days and things like that. I know Ohio State and Alabama had theirs this week. The Gators had theirs yesterday. Some other things like that. Not quite like the Combine, but they televise these things now on NFL Network and stuff like that. So you can still watch it all and kind of get involved in the pre-draft process. Other things regarding the Bucks. Oh, Monty Kiffin is going to be one of the Glazers. I think it was Joel did a media thing, and there were some quotes there. But Monty Kiffin is going to be in the Ring of Honor. He'll be the first non-player or head coach in the Ring of Honor. And if there's anybody who deserves that distinction, it is Monty Kiffin for being the architect of what is still known as the Tampa 2 defense, and the defense that helped win him a Super Bowl and was just generally dominant for about a 7 or 8 year span there in the late 90s and early 2000s. We all love Monty Kiffin. And I've told you the stories before. Monty's son, Chris, who's now a coach, but he was a year younger than me, and he went to Jesuit High School with me, and we were on the football team together. So I knew Chris a little bit. I don't know if he'd remember me. He probably would. But Chris, what was great about playing with Monty Kiffin's son, even though I like Chris as a person, was just having him there because that brought Monty into the fold. And Monty Kiffin used to come to our practices a lot. I remember a couple times when our coach, Dominic Siao, who's still the head coach at Berkeley Prep now, he would bring Coach Kiffin in for he did a couple pregame speeches, and Monty Kiffin gets going. He talks real fast, and he's all over the place, and we loved it as high school kids. And the best part of it all, actually, for especially me, who's big into uniforms and stuff like that, the best part of it, when the Bucks changed their uniforms from the orange to the new stuff in 1997, which was my senior year of high school, I remember Chris Kiffin just walking into our locker room one day, and we had a big table in the middle of our locker room, and all the lockers were around the outside. And Chris came up with this giant cardboard box and just put it on the table in the middle, and it was just a bunch of old stuff from the Bucks that they didn't need anymore because they had changed colors. So there was pants. I actually have a pair of the pants, which I'm going to wear, by the way. When the Bucks eventually do a throwback game again, if that ever happens, I will. These are game pants. They're white with the orange and red stripe down the side. Cleats, and I actually ended up making my game cleats. You remember Rob Thomas? He spelled Rob with two Bs. He was a receiver for the Bucks in the mid-90s and late 90s. And he was number 84, and he was my idol. I loved Rob Thomas. Because he reminded me of me. He made me think I could, maybe go play in the NFL, even though I was a backup wide receiver at Jesuit as a senior. But I saw these white cleats with orange stripes that said 84 on the back, and they fit me perfectly. I pulled them out of that box. I still have them. They're upstairs. I ended up spray painting them black because, Jesuit, we wore black cleats, and wearing those the rest of that season. And we got a ton of stuff out of that deal from having Monty Kiffin around. So always will have fond memories of that, and always will love Monty Kiffin. Good to hear that he's going to be in the Ring of Honor at one of the games this coming season, and we'll get the schedule coming up here soon, but it's not out yet. And speaking of the schedule, and we'll talk about it. Actually, we'll talk about it right now. NFL stuff. The 17th game is official. And this is a big deal. I mean, this isn't just side news hey, we're adding a game. Do you realize the NFL has not changed its schedule It's been 16 games, 8 home, 8 road, since 1978. Okay, the Bucks' inception in 1976, they played 14 games in 76 and 77. They went to 16 games in 78, and it hasn't moved since. I mean, that's, you know, that's the way it's been. It's literally been over 40 years of that. And every other sport, besides, I guess, baseball stayed at 162, which they need to tweak that because that's way too many. But, you know, there's movement here and there. The NHL's played around with some numbers. But, I mean, this is a big deal, especially in a season, a sport like football where the season's not that long. So, I mean, adding a game in football is even a bigger deal than adding two, three, four games in the other sports. And it's going to be an odd number of games, which will be a little weird. But it will always be against the AFC. And it's going to rotate by division, kind of like when you play entire divisions now. Like this year, the Bucks coming up are going to be playing against the AFC East, and all four teams. But you're going to be playing just one team from another division, and it'll be the division that you played against 2 years prior when you played the whole division. So if that makes any sense. Like last season, well, this past season directly, the Bucks played the AFC West. Season before that, they played the AFC South. And so that was 2019. That's why in 2021, they'll play the AFC South. So it's always 2 years removed. I'm not sure why it is that way. But anyway, then it's your mirror. So whatever place you finish, the Bucks finished second this year in the NFC South. Colts finished second in the AFC South. That means the Bucks play the Colts this year. And it's all home or all road for each conference. A lot of people have been wondering, well, how do you have playoff berths? How is that fair if one team played 9 home games and 8 road games and the other team played 8 home games and 9 road games? It's going to be all or nothing where the entire NFC will use their extra game to go on the road to the AFC in 2021 and any other odd-numbered year. And in even-numbered years, it'll be the opposite where the AFC teams will come to the NFC. So everybody in each conference, which are the only teams you're competing for playoff spots against, will have the same schedule, whether it's 9-8 or 8-9. And it'll alternate. So, I have mixed feelings on it. I mean, first of all, I mean, they're lessening the preseason 2 to 3 games. So the total games is staying 20, which that has been the case for a long time. And I can't believe, I mean, maybe some of the, I don't want to say older folks, but, you know, maybe some of the people in their 40s or 50s and 60s that listen to the show can remember when they played 14 games back in the 70s, and even those first two seasons that the Bucks existed, they still played 20 total games. They played 6 preseason games. I mean, can you imagine? Somebody, you don't have to imagine because you might remember it, but like, what was that like? 6 preseason. Imagine playing the 3rd preseason game. You all know how you feel after the 3rd preseason game now, where you're like, oh my God, can we just start the season? Imagine playing your 3rd preseason game and you've got 3 more weeks of that to go. I mean, of course, it's all what you're used to. And back then, they didn't know any other way because they'd never done it any other way with 4 yet. But that must have just been brutal. I mean, that's a month and a half of preseason games. So then it went down to 4 when they went up to 16 games. Now we're up to 17, and they're going to 3 preseason games. And I assume that if it's a year where you have 9 home games in the regular season, I guess you're going to have 1 home preseason and 2 road. And if it's a year where you have 8 home games, like the Bucks do this year, and 9 road games, then you still have the 2 home preseason games and 1 road preseason one. And that makes a difference for season ticket holders, because in certain years, you're going to the price is for 10 home games no matter what. In certain years, 9 of those will be real and 1 will be preseason. And in other years, 8 will be real and 2 will be preseason. But the price will probably not change. And then, of course, there's going to be international games, more of those now with the 17th game. And in fact, they're going to start branching out where it's not just Europe. There's going to be, or not just England, I should say. There's going to be some in Germany, other parts of Europe. South America has been thrown out there. I imagine Mexico City will stay in the mix. You know, all those types of things. And every single team is going to play an international game at least once. Could be more, but at least once every 8 seasons. And teams still have the option to do it themselves too. So like the league mandates you play 1 every 8 years, but you can also like send home games to other places like the Jags have done with playing a couple extra and things like that. And I'm okay with, I mean, honestly, I'm okay with the international games. I probably would have made it so that you have 8 of these international games a year, or I guess it would be 16 with a 32-team league, and make everybody play that 17th game at some sort of neutral site. That's not going to be the case now. I mean, some of these will still be regular home and road games, and we'll figure it out. So, you know, I don't have a problem with the international stuff. What I have a problem with is I love football. I know some people just say, oh, hey, it's more football. What are you complaining about? But there is a point of diminishing returns. There is a point where the reason you love something so much and you wanted more of it, then you don't feel that anymore when you finally get more of it because you've got more of it. And we all know they really want 18. I mean, 17 is not a natural number. And I think, as far as I can tell, this is the only time any of the major pro sports has played an odd number of games on purpose. I mean, there's been COVID stuff and there's been other cancellations. But, you know, as far as I can remember, MLB's been 162. And then going back before that, it was 154. And NBA and NHL have always been 82. I know the NHL was at 84 for a couple seasons. They tried that. But it's always been even numbers. And believe me, they want this one to be an even number too. They just couldn't get there this quick. You know, it's all about getting people on board with something and getting them used to the idea of it. So it was kind of too big of a shock to go 16 straight to 18. So they're going to try this for a little while. But believe me, the ultimate plan is to go to 18 and two preseason games. But for now, it's 17. And I always thought of all the sports, there's things I'd change about the formats for almost all of them. But the NFL, 32 teams, 16 games, and 6 playoff teams on each side, I thought was perfect. And we already gone up on the playoff side with 7 games. We had that this past year. It was okay. It wasn't the big grand fiesta everybody said it would be. But, I mean, fine. I'm not complaining about an extra playoff game each day on the first wildcard weekend. We'll see how this goes. But, again, I really would have liked to have seen them add a bye week, too. I don't think there's any reason not to have 2 bye weeks. And that would give you... What I want is more weeks of football. This does add 1 more week of football. I think you could have accomplished the same thing by adding a bye week and just having 16 games and 2 bye weeks and the whole player safety thing. And you still would have made more money off TV contracts that way with 1 more Sunday night game, 1 more Monday night game, 1 more Thursday night game. That's more inventory. And yet, they're going to go ahead and make it the 17th game. So we'll see how it goes. And... you know, yes, it is more football. If you like football, why not play 20 games? You know, I mean, yeah, I like something. If there has to be a line you draw somewhere, so it's just a matter of where you draw the line. I thought the line was just right at 16. Couple other things as far as the rules that have been, and we've talked about some rules proposals, but now it's official what's going to be going to vote when the owners' meetings happen. Next week when those happen? But the press release is out from the NFL. 2021 Competition Committee and Club Playing Rules Proposals. Remember, you can propose rules as a team, or the Competition Committee can propose them. Either way, they get voted on at the owners' meetings, and you need 75% of a 32-team league. That's 24 teams. So, a couple of the proposals. First of all, Competition Committee has amended a rule, and they want to eliminate overtime in the preseason. That's not a big deal either way. I'd be okay with it. Although I kind of like how even a preseason game, I've been to a preseason overtime game before. I remember it. And I kind of like how it's a football game. We play football games under football rules. Baseball spring training, I love how they don't play extra innings because you don't need any more of that. I don't care about this one that much though either way. I think it'll pass. Probably no reason to have overtime in the preseason. Fine. Number two, they want to expand the prohibition on blocking below the waist by offensive and defensive players. Basically, right now, you can't do that right around the line of scrimmage, and they just want to make the area that you can't do that bigger. That's fine. That's a player safety thing. I'm not, you know, hung up on it either way. Doesn't affect my viewing of the game. The third Competition Committee rules proposal, this isn't a team one. These are Competition Committee ones. Actually, Baltimore is on board with this one too, so this one has a chance. This is the one I'm big on. Permit the replay official. This is known as the sky ref in slang jargon. I call it the couch ref because it's things you can see from your couch at home that obviously need to be fixed that for whatever reason they're not allowed to fix. This permits the replay official and designated members of the officiating department to provide certain objective information to the on-field officials. Basically, they can buzz down and say, hey, yo, fix this, change this. And it's just so common sense. I don't know why it hasn't been done already, but I hope that they pass this one. Because like I always say, you know, sometimes there's a pass called complete and they show a replay. And the TV networks are good at this. These directors and producers and tape guys and everybody that works in a TV truck, they're good at this. They usually have that replay up there within 8 to 10 seconds, maybe 15. It ain't much, okay? It's usually right up there. And you're sitting at home and you're like, huh, ball clearly hit the ground. It's obvious. And now a coach who's on the sideline, who can't see anything, has to have guys yelling at him in his headset from the press box. Hold on, coach, I'm watching the replay. Oh, yeah, yeah, maybe challenge it. Yeah. And he's got to decide, well, what if I lose a timeout here? I can't see this. I got to trust these guys. I'm doing all this blind. And he's got to weigh game strategy. Like, what if this gets overturned? I lose a timeout. They should have no strategy be involved in getting a call right. So if we're sitting there at home, and I already know in the first 10 seconds after a play that the Bucs opponent just had a pass completed for 20 yards and it skidded off the ground, Bruce Arians shouldn't have to be there where I know more than Bruce Arians does, and he's sit there with this little stupid little red sock in his pocket that he's got to decide if he throws it on the field. I mean, it's the dumbest thing imaginable. I can't believe we do it this way. Just have the guy in the booth, they have a beeper just, or even a radio, just say, hey, yeah, man, Mr. Head Referee, that's incomplete. You don't even have to stop the game. He just puts his little finger up to his ear. He's like, okay, we got an incomplete pass there, thank you. And he rules it incomplete. And nobody even argues because everybody knows what happened. And instead, we stop the game. We go to the little peep show. It's so stupid looking when the referee go. We have this giant, I'm not like bragging because everybody's got these, you know, 60 whatever inch TV on my wall that I can see in crystal clear HD. And this guy's going under a little hoodie thing with, you know, 70,000 people screaming and the sun bearing dad's glare on a little, what is it, like a 15-inch screen in there, trying to determine what I can see just sitting on my couch. Why? Like, why is he doing that? It's so easy for us to see it. Let somebody at the game with this same giant HD TV, and they've got them up there. I've been in the Bucs press box. They got these huge HD. I've been in the replay booth. It says positively no visitors allowed because they don't want anybody in there during a game. But when you're up there when there's no game going on, walk right in, okay? Giant HD TVs in there, man. And there should. Just have them sitting up there watching. They don't even need special feeds. They can just watch the actual network telecast because even with those, you see everything. And it'll tell you in the first 10 seconds, oh, yeah, that ball hit the ground. Or, oh, yeah, dude, that guy's foot on that catch, he only got 1 foot in. It takes so little time. You don't need any challenges. You don't need any guys wondering, well, yeah, this is a pretty big play here. Would really love to have this overturned, but I need this timeout too. What should I do? No, that's stupid. Save your timeout. We'll fix the call because it's our freaking job to fix the call, not your job to tell us to do our job better and maybe check it again. God, it's so stupid. I just can't. This one needs to pass. Like, we need a sky ref, a couch ref, whatever you call it. We have the technology. We have the ability. It will eliminate delays in the game. It will eliminate so many things that are just nonsensical, and there's just no reason for. So anyway, rant over on that one. A couple of club playing rule proposals, and one of them here, I'm just looking down the list. The Rams propose adding a loss of down for a second forward pass from behind the line of scrimmage. So yeah, okay, I didn't even realize that. I guess if you throw an illegal forward pass now, you get a penalty, obviously, but you get to repeat the down. But yeah, you should lose a down for that, fine. This is a fun one. Let's talk about this for a second, because some people, this is kind of an old purist thing versus a more progressive way of thinking. And I'm normally pretty progressive, but not when it comes to this. Okay, so the Chiefs have proposed expanding jersey number options for certain positions. If you notice in college, okay, they don't have any jersey number rules. Like, you can see a 350-pound defensive lineman wearing number one. Some people think this is great, and that's hilarious to see that. I think it's stupid. I love in the NFL how the positions have certain numbers. It just looks better. You can see who's who kind of better. I think it's completely ludicrous to have a defensive tackle weighing 350 pounds wearing number seven, okay? I don't think that's funny or any way or cool in any way. I think it's just dumb. So right now, the NFL number rules, and for those of you that don't know these, I'll tell them to you real quick. The quarterback and the punter, those two positions, can wear numbers 1 through 19. I wholeheartedly endorse. I still have like an allergic reaction when I see clips of Doug Flutie from Boston College, because he's a quarterback wearing number 20, or what was it, 22 or something like that. This is the stupidest looking thing on the face of the earth. Like, that should be banned. I'm glad it was banned. Like, a quarterback wearing a number in the 20s. Get out of here with that. Like, it's absurd. So quarterbacks, if you'll notice in college, also have now pretty much stuck to that, although I don't think they're required to by rule. You almost never see it. But anyway, in the NFL, quarterbacks and punters in the pros, numbers 1 through 19. Running backs and defensive backs wear numbers 20 through 49. I don't mind running backs in single digits, and this is something that the Chiefs are proposing. We'll get to it. The center can wear number 50 through 79, but only the center in the NFL. Other offensive linemen, guards, and tackles can wear 60 through 79. Wide receivers used to be just they could wear 80 through 89, had to have a number in the 80s, but now they can wear 10 through 19 and 80 through 89. Tight ends, same thing, only they're also allowed to wear numbers 40 through 49. I don't know of any self-respecting tight end that would ever wear a number in the 40s, though. And then you've got defensive lineman rules. They can wear numbers 90 through 99 or 50 through 79. I don't know many defensive linemen wearing numbers in the 50s or 60s. If you see a defensive lineman wearing number 60-something, he probably sucks. And then linebackers, same thing. They can wear numbers 40 through 59 or 90 through 99. You don't see a lot of numbers in the 90s with linebackers. It's mostly 40 through 59, but they are allowed to wear in the 90s. In fact, I remember Lavon Kirkland for the Steelers wore number 99, and he was also like almost 300 pounds, I think. So I used to think he was a defensive lineman because he wore a defensive lineman number, and he weighed as much. He was like 275, 280, something like that. But he was a linebacker. He was actually a linebacker. But I like just having – it gives structure to the look of a football game, whereas it's a free-for-all in college, and you don't know who the hell's doing what. Plus, they got two guys wearing the same number. I mean, it's the Wild West in college. They need to rein all that in my opinion. So anyway, the Chiefs have proposed just a couple things. Defensive backs, running backs, tight ends, wide receivers, and linebackers, they want to allow to wear single-digit numbers now. So, DBs, running backs, and wide receivers, that's fine. I think that's totally appropriate for those three positions to wear single digits. Tight ends should not be allowed to wear single-digit numbers, and neither should linebackers. You say, Bobby, articulate it. Why? It just doesn't look right, okay? I can't articulate it. We're not in debate prep here. We're not in court. It just looks dumb. I don't like the way it looks, and I don't like the way you look up at a college game, and you see guys, especially like after a play is over, and who's that? I don't know. You know, what position is he playing? I like the structure it gives you, and there's plenty of room within the NFL's numbering regulations for everybody to wear a nice number that they want to wear. But I mean, like I said, what tight end, and this is under the current rules, number 40, like imagine a tight end wearing number 40-something. Like I think a John Lynch number 47 as a safety, that was fine. 40s are not very coveted numbers by football players. Normally, if you look at any high school team, this isn't always the case, but if you look at any high school team, if you have a number in the 40s, that's probably not the best players out there. And same thing in an NFL training camp. A lot of times those things get rearranged. It's kind of like baseball spring training where yeah, guys wearing number 88, 92, 93. Those are the minor league guys that are just filling out the roster and coming in the second half of spring training games. And then, you know, if they do make the club, they usually change numbers. And wear whatever you want. I'm not going to judge, but as far as having rules about it, I kind of do like how the NFL has some rules. Although I don't mind the Chiefs' proposal that much. I really just wanted to go on a rant about the college numbering system more than anything. But that's something that may or may not pass. We'll see. The overtime ones we have talked about, there are a couple. There's the spot and choose method, which I love, which I doubt will pass. There's another proposal, though, by the Ravens. And this one just says we're going to play 7.5 minutes with each team having two timeouts, no matter what. Like, even if somebody scores, we're playing the full 7.5 minutes, and that's that. And I think that's bad. I mean, I think that just invites more ties. If some team does get ahead in overtime, my God, just call them the winner. Don't leave it to chance that some other team comes back and ties it, and then we still have a tie. You know, I hate ties. I don't want any ties. That's the main thing. That's why I like sudden death. And at the very least, I say give each team the ball once And if it's still tied after that, then do sudden death. And I would not stop after, you know, 7.5 minutes or 10 minutes. I'd play until I do playoff overtime rules, basically, for all games. I mean, it doesn't come up that often. It's not that big of a deal, but it's worth it to avoid those annoying ties. They look so out of place in the standings, and they mess up the percentages. I hate it. So anyway, those are the big ones as far as the rules proposals. We'll see what passes and what doesn't, and we'll talk more about that next week. Couple emails. Always love to do mailbag. Like I always tell you guys, email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com is the address. It's BobbyGameDay, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. And on Twitter, you can always get me at BobbyGameDay. If you think the show sucks, if the show is good, whatever, cushion, discussion, always send it there. I am ready for anything, and I love hearing your feedback, positive or negative. So I got a couple emails this week. This one's from Raymond Kelly. Says, Bobby, I have an intriguing idea that no one has thought of but me. Instead of these awful overseas games, how about teams each play a game, two teams basically play each other in other stadiums that are not their own during the regular season? So for that extra game. So he's basically saying, how about the Bears play the Packers in Atlanta? How about the Bucks play the 49ers in Las Vegas? Steelers Falcons in Miami, he says. If I nominate you as the voice of the people, will you run, Bobby, and will you serve? Raymond, first of all, thanks for the email. I love getting your emails, and thanks for listening. I'm not on board with this one, buddy. I don't think there's... I think it's completely nonsensical to have a game like at Raymond James Stadium between the Bengals and, you know, the Saints or something, or whoever the hell. I don't know. Why? Like, I'd just rather have another Buck game there. Like, what I have proposed before... So here's the thing about ideas. Keep the ideas coming. This is why I'm never gonna poo-poo somebody's idea completely. Because even if you don't like the idea, that's how brainstorming works. You start with something, and somebody just says something out loud. Okay, well, maybe that makes me think of something else, even though that's not the idea I like. So I'd really discourage ripping on people for just brainstorming stuff. Even if I don't like it, I want to hear it. So Raymond, no, I don't like this. I don't think there's any reason for random teams to play in other teams' stadiums. You know, there's just, I don't see, why would I want to have the Bucks and 49ers in Las Vegas? I'd rather have that in Tampa, or at least have it be in San Francisco for one of their games. But what it did make me think of was an old proposal I had for these three preseason games. Instead of having an odd number, 2-1 or 1-2, everybody gets one home preseason game, everybody gets one road preseason game. For the third preseason game, that's where I would have teams play, but not in other NFL stadiums. I'd play games around the country in places that don't have NFL football. You know? Like, how about, like, a Saints-Titans preseason game in Birmingham at Legion Field? Or even in Tuscaloosa at Alabama's field? You know? How about Carolina playing at Clemson against somebody in the preseason? How about the Bucks playing a preseason game in Orlando or Gainesville in the Swamp or Tallahassee at Doak Campbell? That's how I would do it. You would need 16 of these sites each year. And again, there's 32 teams. Everybody play one home preseason game. Everybody play one road preseason game. The third one would be a neutral site game. You know, how about the Seahawks and the Vikings play a preseason game in Bismarck, North... Or how about North Dakota State's Dome, wherever that... The Fargo Dome. You know, let people have an NFL game in their backyard in places like that that are more out of the way. You know, El Paso at the Sun Bowl. Give me the Raiders and the, you know, Cowboys or something in El Paso. Stuff like that. Like, that's what I would do. So that is a good email, Raymond, even though I don't like your idea, because it made me think of that. And I think it'd be cool to play more at college stadiums or places, you know, people in Orlando. Hey, we got a Bucks game here tonight. That gets more people in Orlando paying attention to the Bucks, you know, when the season starts, not just for that one preseason game. And, you know, you want to expand your markets internationally. I get that. But you can also do it domestically in places. I mean, I can think of a million places that it'd be cool to have an NFL game. Have one in Nebraska at their stadium, Memorial Stadium in Lincoln. You know, you could have one at Autzen Stadium in Oregon. Have the Seahawks play a game there in Eugene against, you know, the 49ers, or not the 49ers, they don't play divisional preseason games, but against the, you know, some AFC or NFC team that's not in their division. Any of that. Those are all cool places. How about Harvard and Yale? They have cool historic football stadiums. Play a Patriots preseason game at one of those. That's that. I think that is a good idea. Now, maybe you'll mock my idea. I'm not mocking yours, Raymond. I'm playing off of it. So thank you for the email. I appreciate it. I had one other email here. This one's from Rob. He says, Bobby, my mind has been toying with the idea that coaches mean almost nothing in pro football, that success is almost entirely a function of the quality of players a team has. He says, Belichick is with Cleveland. They suck. He goes to New England. He has Tom Brady, and they win everything. Tom Brady leaves. New England sucks with Belichick. But with the Bucks, they now win the Super Bowl. Lovie Smith got to the Super Bowl, but I've never seen a worse performance than his run with the Bucks. Did he just forget how to coach, or was it that Chicago had better players, like Brian Urlacher? He says, anyway, curious to hear your thoughts. Love the podcast. Rob. Rob, thank you for the email. It's a good email. You know, I think, like I say always, this stuff is way more random than we like to give credit for. I do think coaching matters. I think it is more random in other sports than it is. In fact, football, I think it's the sport that matters the most. I mean, you see hockey teams, like, fire their coach like in the middle of the year, and then they go on like the cup final. Like, it doesn't even matter. As much as I love John Cooper for the Lightning, like, hockey teams and NBA teams, same way, you know, whatever. I mean, it's not that as important. I think with football it is. I think if you look at what the Bucks were able to do this year, and obviously Tom Brady had a great deal to do with that, but what Todd Bowles, and yeah, it's not just the head coach, it's the assistants too. What Todd Bowles did with the defense cannot be taken lightly. And if you look at Belichick back then, I mean, that Browns situation was not a good one, for sure. And yeah, that probably had more to do with it than anything. But I don't think Belichick was a bad coach back then and just turned good. I think he was always a good coach. And yes, that matters, but situations matter too. So I think it's a little bit of both of what you're saying, to make a short answer sound even longer. If I told you tomorrow, for example, Rob, here's our team. Same team. Bucks just won the Super Bowl. We're returning 22 starters. Okay. We're going to have Rich Kotite. Not that I hate to pick on Rich Kotite, but just think of some random NFL coach who wasn't that good, or even some random Bucks coach that wasn't that. Okay. Lovie Smith's coming back tomorrow. Same Bucks roster. Everything's the same. But Lovie Smith and his staff, or Greg Schiano and his staff, are coming back tomorrow. Arians, Leftwich, Bowles, they're all gone. Would you be like, yeah, whatever. Coaching doesn't matter. We got the players. You'd want that continuity. And you'd want to have the guys that you saw help this team get to where it got. I would too, right? So I think it matters a little bit. But I do understand your premise. To say it's almost entirely a function of the quality of players, I wouldn't go that far. But yeah, I mean, the old saying, it's the Jimmys and Joes, not the X's and O's. There's a little truth to that. And hey, I'm coaching Little League right now for my son's team. I always try to be an assistant because it's a little less of a commitment. You got some more flexibility. But I'm the head coach this year. And this is the first year he's played. He's nine. This is the first year he's played in a division where it's all kid pitch. There's no coach pitch. Regular baseball rules. Keeping score, wins and losses, all that stuff. And so, you know, as the head coach, and again, these kids are nine. I mean, most of them are space cadets. I'm not like putting over the important emphasis on it. But I feel there are times when I can influence the outcome of games with my coaching, and other times I feel completely helpless. So I'm just trying to think about, you know, obviously it's not the same as coaching an NFL team, but I feel like if you took my same team with a worse coach, they wouldn't do as well. And if you took my same team with a better coach, they might be able to do a little better. Yeah, I do feel like it matters. Now, those are kids, not the same as adults. But I am starting to experience that now firsthand, because this is my first time coaching where we actually count stuff. And by the way, I recommend it to anybody with kids. Be the head coach just once. It's not the same as being an assistant. I may very well go back to being an assistant, but everybody should be the head coach just once, because it's kind of fun. Like, and listen, the main part about it that I like with Little League, one, I got to do the draft, so it's kind of like being the coach and GM. It's like playing fantasy baseball only with nine-year-olds. And I remember doing the tryout, you know, writing things down, taking notes on each kid. And it feels a little weird when they're nine. And then going to the draft, and it's like a meat market type thing. But I enjoyed it, I'm not going to lie. I had full control over uniforms, which was big for me. Got to choose our colors. And number three, I like dealing with umpires. Like, when you're the assistant, you don't really talk to the umpires much. But I'm not one of these little league coaches that gets on the umpire in a game with nine-year-olds. Who cares? You know what I mean? I'm not that guy. But I like to talk to him a little bit, mostly in a friendly way, and kind of work them a little bit. I enjoy that part of it too. I recommend it to anybody, whether it's Little League or whether it's your kid's flag football league or your basketball league, whatever it is. Try it one time if you're in that position, you ever get a chance to do it as the head coach. I'm having a blast. And, you know, I'm one step away. I haven't done it yet, but I do have baseball pants up there from just going full gear like a real baseball manager and actually wearing my team's uniform when I manage a game. And I still think I might do it before the season's over, although my wife's been trying to talk me out of that. And I don't think she'd attend the game if it's the one I do that for. But anyway, Rob, thank you for the email. I appreciate it. And like I always say, if you want to give me some emails, I love answering your questions or just reading your comments. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. And you can also get me on Twitter @BobbyGameDay. So with all that said, that'll wrap it up for the free stretch this week. We didn't get to Deshaun Watson's extremely weird habit. No matter what you believe about his massage stories, it looks like he's had over 40 massage therapists one way or the other. That part alone is kind of weird. You know, usually you keep that to a smaller number, even if you get a lot of massages. But we'll get to that next week. Maybe, of course, we'll be a week closer to the draft. Plenty of other things. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform and letting me get in front of all of you on the single best place for Bucks coverage anywhere. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. And, of course, thanks to all of you for listening. Have a great weekend. Get to cool down a little bit. If you're into the religious stuff, it's Easter weekend. Enjoy that. Got the Final Four, Masters next week. Good time of year for sports, so enjoy it. Things are starting to slowly get back to, opening week in MLB. The Rays are starting today. Have fun with all of it. I'll talk to you next week. That's the free stretch wherever you are. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.